Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, social critic, and mental health consultant. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. We invite your calls and story to 781-3875. How are you doing today, Elizabeth?
I'm good, Brian. How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Did you have an Easter celebration with your new family?
Yeah, we took the day off and didn't do anything.
Well, that's good. No egg hunting, though, I take it.
Not yet.
We spent a weekend, I think I told you that we had 25 people at our Easter celebration. We kind of had a big party Saturday night. We had a lot of birthdays and two marriages coming up and just a lot of things to celebrate. Mm-hmm. And I was counting up and we had over 150 years worth of marital experience in the room.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a lot of wisdom and a lot of people that have stuck it out through thick and thin,
yeah,
for better or worse. And it was a great weekend. So I'm looking forward to this week to kind of sharing the stories, following up from last week. We talked about family togetherness and how do we keep it together within families, even when it's stressful, when you're 25 people together and you have a lot of different personalities. So I'd love to follow up on that conversation and anything else that happens to be on your mind when it comes to relationships, your emotional state, your sense of mental health and well-being, because this is our community hour to talk about our mental health. I'm here to field any of those questions that you've always wanted to ask a therapist but didn't know where to start or who to go to. So if there's something that's on your mind, you're welcome to call in with those questions or anything related to our topics today, because it's important, you know, that we look at our mental health in the context of our lives, that when we're struggling, you know, maybe feeling depressed or anxious or lacking energy or frustrated, you know, when we're feeling these things and wondering, oh my gosh, is there something wrong with me? Maybe there's something wrong with my mental health. Maybe I'm slipping into, you know, some sort of dark period. To look at what's going on in the rest of our lives. You know, how are our relationships? How are we getting along with our children? How are we getting along with our coworkers? How are we getting along with our spouse or our significant others? Because the quality of our interpersonal relationships has a huge impact on our mental health and well-being and on our health in general. You know, our stress levels, our blood pressure. And it's funny because this morning my husband and I had our annual exam. And now we're officially those old people that go with each other to our appointments so that we can make sure that we're both hearing the same thing.
Right.
But for us, it's also a little bit of competition because we want to see how we do on our blood tests and our blood pressure. And my husband's blood pressure was a little bit lower than mine today, so he's feeling a little righteous. But it's interesting, you know, these things we do to take care of our physical health. We should be doing these same things to take care of our emotional and our mental health and well-being. You know, checking in, talking to someone about how we're feeling, sharing our experiences. Because quite often I found over my almost 20 years of doing this work that the mere act of telling the story, sharing our struggle, talking about those things that are difficult for us can have a huge healing effect. So I invite your calls at 805-781-3875.
So what's on your mind today, Elizabeth?
So I guess what's on my mind is the stories of marriage. And there's been a lot going on, obviously, with the Supreme Court and hearing the cases for the right to marry. And we've been, you know, talking about it as a culture for a long time. And there's a lot of people that are really passionate on both sides about who can marry and who should marry and why do we marry. But as a marriage and family therapist and a wife and a mom, my concern is that we're fighting for something that we're culturally not doing very well.
Yeah.
That we struggle with our marriages. And that as much as we want to be married and that we, you know, want to share our lives with someone else, we have a real cultural problem with longevity and with being able to maintain the quality of our marital life. So I want to talk about marriage today because the thing that's interesting is that there's a lot of science that backs up how we can do relationships well. And unfortunately, what we hear in the cultural story, right, is that marriages don't last, don't expect it to be forever, maybe marriage is out of style, a lot of people are choosing not to marry.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to address that. Why are we afraid to marry? You know, why does marriage have such a bad reputation? Why have we come to believe that, you know, it's just a sheer luck if you can make it, because it's not. I think part of it started, you know, we have this divorce culture that we've kind of morphed into since the 70s when divorce started to peak. I mean, it was astronomical in the 70s. And we have this idea that divorce has just continued to be, you know, at 50% since then. But it's statistically not true. The baby boomers were the biggest generation to divorce, and they actually continue to have the highest rate of divorce in our culture. The boomers in old age, like Tipper and Al Gore going through their divorce a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. So the baby boomers have been quintessentially the divorce culture. Unfortunately, the fallout from that is that the generations that have followed them are now afraid to marry in many cases because they don't want to go through the same thing their parents and some their grandparents went through with divorce and the havoc that it wreaked on their childhood or their family, extended family. So unfortunately, there's been a lot of misperceptions that have continued on about marriage that has created a huge sense of fear. I mean, how old are you now?
34.
34. So how do you feel about marriage?
Well, I come from a divorced parents, and I was very fortunate because they're still very close, and we still do family holidays together and stuff. But it affected me, and I also see my grandparents on both sides had successful marriages and see how both work, and you can still have a happy, functional family in both cases. And then now I'm starting my own family, and I had these plans set out, and the plans are unfolding, just not in the same order I had planned them out.
So marriage is still a possibility for you. You're not a disbeliever.
No, I was definitely planning on it, and we had the baby before. I hope she's not listening now. But I was gonna propose to her the first half of this year.
Nice.
And then we had our little baby Kieran come along, and so I kind of told her that was my plan, and she said, "Well, no, let's wait. I don't want to look fat in my wedding dress, and I don't want to have to stress about planning and place settings and who's gonna sit where while I'm trying to get ready for a baby." So
you still have faith in the institution?
Absolutely, and good. I'm really excited to.
Well, maybe today with some of the tips here, it'll help you to set your course with a little more confidence.
All right.
So the first thing I want to do is I want to dispel the rumor, or not the rumor, but the myth about the 50% marriages ending in divorce. I'm sure that's something you've heard.
Absolutely.
And it's something that is thrown out there. But the truth of the matter is, according to the Wharton School of Business study that was done, that the overall divorce rate right now for those that were married in the 80s, which is my generation, the overall divorce rate is 39%. And that's far less than 50%. And if you are a college graduate who got married over the age of 25 to someone that you knew for more than 2 years, your overall divorce rate is 19%. Super low. For those that were college graduates who got married before the age of 25, and that age seems to be a real marker, the divorce rate is 35%. And then it really peaks. The divorce rate for those that have little or no college and got married under the age of 25, that's where you see 51% divorce rate in that specific demographic. Mm-hmm. But there are things we can do just by our sheer education and getting to a certain age to reduce the risk of divorce right off the bat. But it's important to understand that we don't just have this societal divorce rate of 50%. And the reason it's important to understand that is that think about your marriage attitude. And if you believe that only half of all marriages make it, when you hit a trouble spot in your marriage, you're more likely to throw up your arms and say, "Hey, I guess we're just one of the 50%.
Right.
But if you were to understand that only 19% of your demographic gets divorced and you hit a trouble spot, you're going to be much more motivated to think, gosh, you know, we need to work this out, mm-hmm. right?
Right?
Divorce is very rare. We need to move forward with this. And I think just that attitude, that understanding of, you know, what is the expectation for marital success can change how we approach trying to heal our marriages when we do get into trouble. So what I recommend is a book, actually, for you and for anyone else who's in a marriage, thinking about a marriage, knows someone who's married, is a book written by Tara Parker Pope called For Better, The Science of a Good Marriage. And she actually is a science and health writer for newspapers. And when her own marriage started to fall apart, she was so upset that she didn't have the skills and tools to try to make it better. And so she kind of set off on this journey to see if there was anything she could have done to help her marriage stay close. And she was really upset in some ways to find out that there was a lot of research that exists out there on things she could have done, she and her husband could have done to help them stay together had they approached it sooner or gotten the help they needed. And so she wrote this book about all of the research and all of the things that we can look at to help us be more successful in our marriages. And it's interesting because she comes from a science writer point of view and not from a therapist point of view. So she looks at the whole idea of marriage very pragmatically.
Right.
And it's fascinating. One of the things that she does talk about is that there are, you know, besides understanding the odds of marriage, you know, you wait till you're 25. The reason we wait till we're 25 is because our brain doesn't fully develop into adulthood until the age of 25. Which is interesting because we tend to throw our kids out the door at 18, expect right. them to be fully functioning adults, but they're really not quite there till 25. So you really can't comprehend when you say, I'm making a lifetime commitment, what that lifetime commitment's going to look like. So 25 is huge. Having, you know, the college degree behind you helps gives you stability in your finances quite often. It's easier to find work. And, you know, money is the number one problem that couples tend to have. So when your financial situation's a little more stable, it's easier to maintain your marriage. The other thing is coming from a similar background. And we have this, you know, kind of idea that opposites attract. And quite often opposites attract in looks and in personality. But when it comes to familial backgrounds, the couples that have more common family values, that their families kind of came from the same type of area or had the same beliefs or some of the same background or some of the same values. And it wasn't necessarily cultural, but more economic and education backgrounds and geography. I don't know if I'm saying that right, background, that kind of homogamy, those kind of similarities really helped those couples do better in the long run. So I think one of the first things we look at marital success is, are we doing what we can before we get married, right, to choose a partner who's going to be able to be with us for the long haul? The other thing that's interesting and kind of, I don't know, frustrating for people who came out of a culture of divorce in their family is that unfortunately when you grow up in a home where there's been divorce, the odds of you getting divorced quadruple. Mm-hmm. I think you have a 75% greater chance of getting divorced if you come from a divorced family. But some of the things you can do to overcome that is, one is make it, get those main things under your belt, right? Get over 25, get that college degree or that education experience. But also making it to your 10-year mark as a couple. That at 10 years, all of those background things, if you were a child of divorce, if you didn't have a college degree, they tend to level out and you can hit a time of stability. Like the 10-year mark on tends to really help couples kind of gel and move forward, especially if the couples in that 10-year period of time do the work necessary to keep their marriage healthy. And we're going to talk a bit about some of those things we can do to keep our marriages healthy. But don't let me take all the time here. You're welcome to call in 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I welcome your phone calls. I welcome your story. What is it about marriage? Are you avoiding it? Are you having a great time being married? Are you wondering why your marriage isn't where it's supposed to be? I'd love to hear from you today and share our story as a community and try to figure out how we can make our marriages worth what we're fighting for as a country and as a culture. And we'll be back to take your calls right after this.
You are listening to The Reluctant Therapist. That phone number again is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. Here's a highlight from the KCBX Community Calendar. There is a fundraiser in support of Cambria Wesh Doherty and her family. She has a rare cancer. The fundraiser is a tour of the Sweet Pea Flower Farm and the Enchanted Garden in Atascadero. It's midday this Saturday. For all the details, go to the community calendar at kcbx.org. That phone number again to speak with Elizabeth, the Reluctant Therapist, is 781-3875.
And just be patient with the phones because poor Brian's in there trying to do both things. So please, if you don't get through the first time, call back 781-3875. This is a conversation with the reluctant therapist, and we're talking about marriage and how we can make it more successful. If we're fighting for the right to be married, then let's do what we can to figure out how to make them last, because they can last, and they can last not only well, but extremely well. It's amazing that the research that has been going on in the last 10, 15 years, it has dispelled some of the myths that we have about marriage. One is about divorce, as I mentioned earlier, that it's not really true that we have 50% of all marriages ending divorce. But the other thing is that we have this idea that romance in our marriages, romantic love, somehow dies off early on, that after the first, 18 months to 2 years, you just kind of settle into a routine and that you no longer have that spark in your marriage. But the interesting thing is they have done a lot of research on couples that have been married for 25 to 40 to 50 years, and they found that romance in these long-term marriages can be really strong. And there's a few things that these couples do consistently that maintains the romance. One of the first things is that they do have a consistent date night. And they don't just hang out and watch TV on the couch, but they actually do things together. They try new things, take a dance class, or go out to and try a new restaurant, or take a cooking class. These couples do active things to maintain the excitement and newness in their marriage. They also have sex. And that's, something that we also don't talk about a lot, because people assume that once you get married, you don't need to have sex anymore, or maybe you're too busy for it. That maybe sex takes up too much time and we have the kids, but there's a lot that goes on biologically in our relationships, and how we bond to our partners is a lot through the hormones that are released through sex. So not only is it good for our physical health, but it's good for our emotional and mental health as well. Michael, you're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
How are you doing?
I'm good.
I just wanted to comment that a lot of the parameters that you outlined for a successful marriage are ones that my wife and I did not meet, and yet we've been married 40 years.
And what's your secret?
Sex is part of it. That's always been a priority for both of us, other than that period in time when we were raising young kids and my wife was exhausted. She was a stay-at-home mom. So we still had sex, but not the frequency.
Mm-hmm. It does get better.
Pardon me?
It does come back around, doesn't it? After the kids go, yeah.
Especially after they leave. I think the secret, I'll tell you a little story, and this was the deciding or the point for both of us that we realized we were in a committed marriage. And that was around the 10-year mark, which was one of your parameters, mm-hmm. We actually separated for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And it was a contentious period, and I'm not sure why. I think the fact that a lot of her girlfriends were getting divorces and moving on and playing around and that type of thing, mm-hmm. might have had some influence. But after that period and we got back, we started to fall into that same routine. And then one day or one fight, and I think it was my wife, who's really a perceptive individual, said to me, she said, "Well, is this something you're going to want to divorce me for?" And it just struck me at that point in time that, all of this is small stuff. We're wasting our time. Let's move on and enjoy the good things.
I love that you said that, and you brought up such key points here, Michael, because that 10-year mark is huge. And what you described is something we call in the therapeutic world is a strong second marriage. And not that you got divorced and got remarried, but that your first marriage was that kind of immature marriage, those first 5-10 years. We were kind of getting to know each other. We tend to replicate our parents' relationship in a lot of ways. We have young children. We're trying to figure it out. And that marriage isn't really strong. But then you go through a storm, like you talked about. You separated for a year and a half, not sure why. Things are contentious. But you came back together. And the strength from that coming back together and remaking that commitment is like a tree that's withstood a storm, has deeper, stronger roots because of going through that storm. And I think that's the key to the success of your marriage. And I really appreciate you sharing that story.
Well, you're welcome.
Have a great day, Michael.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks. Hi, Curtis. You're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
Well, that was quick. All right. Well, we've kind of been in a crisis mode with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
We've been married for 35 years coming up. And so I've been through a lot of health issues.
Mm-hmm.
A stroke 6 years ago, which I've mostly recovered from. And then prostate cancer, which has certain debilitating effects, actually.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, the removal thereof.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're kind of at the out point right now. My wife wants to kind of separate because,
mm-hmm.
you know, the stroke and both those things affected me deleteriously, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to figure out, you know, where to try. You know, we haven't had sex for probably 5 or 6 years.
And it makes it really difficult to stay connected, right, without that physical intimacy.
Absolutely. That's her biggest complaint.
So what are some things that you can do that maybe is an intercourse that is sexually intimate?
Well, we could have intercourse. I just need to, you know, get a vacuum pump, which mm-hmm. is, you know, helps a male have an erection.
Mm-hmm.
Which are possibilities. I'm working on that.
Good for you.
But my wife now, she's at a point, you know, she says it's too late.
And so tell me what you guys have done to kind of say, all right, if it's too late, then what does it look like if we're not together? You know, because sometimes it sounds good to say I'm done, I'm throwing in the towel, but then you start talking about what that actually means. And it's not as appealing as actually coming back together and saying, where's our one more shot here after 35 years?
Okay, just a little quick background on that. Yeah, that makes sense. What happens is, you know, I've had all these things happen to me. My career went into the toilet.
Yeah.
I was an electrical contractor, have not been able to perform at that level.
Mm-hmm.
So I've sort of done some other things, try and figure out how to make a living. So what happens is, you know, we own a house together,
mm-hmm.
and she's pretty financially, she has a lot more money stashed away in retirement. I'm sort of living on what little work I can gather,
mm-hmm.
and a small Social Security thing,
so
which makes it tough. So she understands that if we divorce, that she'll lose half of everything. She'll probably end up paying me alimony.
So the power is out of balance in your marriage after...
Way out of balance.
Right? And so that is something that really causes conflict for couples, is when the power gets out of balance. And quite often it's the women who tend to have least power because they have least financial resources. But yours is switched. And you've
Mine's
also had...
the other way. Yes, right. I'm on the downside of this.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you've had the medical issues on top of it. So finding your way back to that balanced place with your wife is to find some way that you can find your... sense of who you are, your pride in who you are, because a lot of times it's, you know, our partners lose faith in us because we lose faith in us. And
yes,
right?
Exactly. Self-esteem is gone, yeah. Practically, or is trying to get it back, let's put it that way.
So here's what my prescription is for you, Curtis.
Yes, ma'am.
I want you to focus on your esteem in this moment and doing one or two small things that you can do in the next month that will make you feel a bit more like you felt 5 or 10 years ago. And instead of pursuing your wife and saying, let's work this out, or how can I make it better? I want you to take some steps to make you feel better and stronger. And when you're able to model that sense of pride in yourself, I think it will awaken a bit in your wife, those feelings she had for you before.
Well, that's a good, yeah, that's a possibility. I can see the possibilities in that. Yeah.
Start there.
Sort of a natural way of rectifying things if you want, rather than sort of manipulative.
Right, trying to force it. Try to do those little things to try to reclaim a bit of who you were before, so that'll bring the power back to more balance. Like, yeah, this is the man I was. Maybe not the same, maybe a bit different, but remember, here's who I am. But you need to discover that in yourself a little bit so that she sees it. You can't talk her into it. You got to show her it, okay? Start there.
I'm well aware that talking her into it won't work.
Start there, and then call me back in a couple months, and we'll go to step two.
Excellent.
Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you.
Have a good day, Curtis.
You too. Bye.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm in a relationship of about 3 years now, and it's been very difficult. It's great in some ways. As far as romantically, we have a ton of stuff in common. We both like cats. We even park the same. We even have some of the same scars from our childhood on different parts of our body. But she is really, really jealous of me. Every little thing, every little glance from another female at a supermarket or gas station. I lost my flute one time, and I found it a couple weeks later over by the trash can, and she thought that I had been over to the ladies playing flute, and it's just a constant day-to-day. We've not gone a week in 3 years where we haven't had a jealousy episode, and I've offered all kinds of things as far as I'll carry a cell phone on me all the time, or, you know, you can I'll write a journal or anything like that. And she's working with a holistic doctor on nutrition and stuff like that, and that seems to help with the metabolism. Mm-hmm. So we don't get these really intense thoughts of jealousy. I was wondering if you had anything to add to that.
Yeah, that's a really tough place to be, right? When you're trying to prove ourselves to someone who can't seem to see it or hear it. And I can hear the frustration in your voice and your willingness to do whatever to make it right.
Mm-hmm.
I think kind of what I mentioned to Curtis before is that we have to do the work ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, is that quite often, you know, we're most unhappy in our relationships, mm-hmm, when we're not okay in our own body or our own life. And it sounds like she's doing some things to heal that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a history in this relationship of being unfaithful or?
No, not at all.
Okay. So it's something
not
she's.
Not at all. I mean, I was born monogamous. I've seen papers on other sexual preferences, and I'm convinced that, to give you an example, there was a comet that was supposed to be visible about a week or two ago, and people were going out and look for it. And I called a friend, and he was out looking for it, but I did talk to his wife, and I said, have you seen anything? Because it's getting foggy out there. And then I remembered to call her back just a minute later to see, you know, where it was in relationship to the moon setting. And she was, you know, kind of spying on me outside my window and listening. And she says, you know, who did you call? I said, well, I called my friend's wife. You know her, and we've had dinner together and all, and you can call her back right now, and she'll verify it. And then I get into that double bind of, well, you're going to have some code word, or she'll know that I'm in the room, and she'll cover for you, or something like that. So, and there's been many, I mean, just hundreds of times like that where I've gone out, you know, by myself to grab a quick lunch while I'm having appointments over in town, and I'll say, here's the receipt, you know, call the hostess and ask if I was sitting alone or anything.
So I think
ask the waitress. You know, I was alone.
I think the hard thing, Paul, is I can hear the frustration in your voice as you're saying is that this is an issue that has come into the relationship, and it was not something that was created here. And so I think, unfortunately, it's going to be something that's going to have to be worked out, you know, outside of the relationship in order to make it whole. Because I think at this point, you know, you can't dance enough steps to make it look like it's balanced.
You mean something? I mean, it started like just after we were less than a month together.
Right.
So what you're saying is it's outside, it's something that happened before I even got to know her?
It's a gift, and sarcastically, it's a gift that she brought to the marriage, to the relationship. You know, either her father was unfaithful or grandfather, or other relationships in her life. You know, there's a great song that John Mayer sings called Daughters. And it talks about how, you know, women bring their experience of their father and other men into their relationships that they're currently in. So no matter how great you are, if those things come into the relationship, it makes it really hard to make it real. And so I would encourage you to kind of set some boundaries and say, you know, here's who I am, and I need you to be really confident and comfortable with who you are so that this can work together. Because if you continue to try to fix this, you're going to just continue to feel worn down. And I think it's going to have to be something she works with outside of the context of the two of you.
I understand. That makes sense. Because she did say, you know, over the years that she's had two, you know, previous marriages that lasted over a decade, over that 10-year period, but there was, you know, outside sex going on outside the marriage.
So she brought a lot of package along with her, a lot of baggage along with her. And if she's willing to do that work, you can encourage her to. But I think for you to try to fix something that has happened to her in the past, you're just going to feel more and more frustrated, and it's going to be more and more contentious. And I think you need to start finding a way to kind of put this boundary around yourself and say, here's who I am. If you can find a way to be in this relationship with me as I am happily here. And then you'll have to go forward from there with her.
What about my trust issues? Like a lot of times, like today, we had dinner planned, and then she says, well, are you coming over? I said, yes, what time? And she doesn't answer me. She says, well, if you're going to make other plans or not come over, like she's trying to gain control. I said, I've said five times now, yes, I'd like to get to dinner with you. And then she's often threatened on going out with other guys. She'll go out dancing with other guys. She's had other guys over for Thanksgiving or gone over to other guys' house to drink margaritas and stuff. And so that's what really raises my blood pressure, is when I'm afraid that if I don't give her, you know, some kind of control or bow to her will, that she's going to use that over me as far as, you know, being non-monogamous.
Right. Okay, so here, this is my thoughts for you to chew on for today, Paul. Quite often what we find is that we are, when someone accuses us of something, it's generally something that they are capable of doing. That very rarely do we ever suspect someone of something that we are not capable of doing. So I just want you to chew on that idea, that if there are issues of infidelity or being unfaithful or trust or mistrust, if your partner is mistrusting you for no reason, then I would be concerned that your partner actually is a person that you need to think about whether you can trust her or not. So chew on that. And I appreciate you calling and sharing your story, because I think it is a story that many people struggle with in relationships, about power and infidelity and what kind of baggage comes into our relationships from other relationships and from our childhood. I appreciate your call. We're going to come back and take a call from Rhonda after this break. You can give a phone call at 781-3875 if you'd like to join a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett.
That number again is 781-3875. That's area code 805-781-3875. Coming up at 3 o'clock in just about a half hour, it's Fresh Air with Terry Gross. In 1990, Hisham Matar's father was kidnapped and sent to a Libyan prison for opposing the Gaddafi regime. Matar never saw his father again. After the fall of the Gaddafi regime, Matar returned to Libya, where he grew up, to investigate what happened to his father. On the next Fresh Air at 3 o'clock today, he tells us what he learned, which he writes about in his current edition of The New Yorker. Join us at 3 for Fresh Air. The number again to speak with Elizabeth Barrett, the reluctant therapist, is 805-781-3875.
See, I think what's so important is to understand that when we get into a marriage, you know, we are combining our life with someone else, but we're not just two individuals that are coming into this relationship. We're bringing our entire family history into our relationship, our parents' marriage, our relationship with our siblings, past relationships we've had with other people, you know, our grandparents' relationships, our religious background. You know, there's a lot that we bring to our combining our lives with someone else. And so there are couples that seem to do it seamlessly. They just come together and it works. And for other couples, there is some compromise, quite a bit of compromise that has to happen. And so I think one of the things that I continually want to look at is the before we get married part of the relationship, right? If there are red flags going into that marriage, questions about infidelity, someone who comes from a background that's not, they don't feel like they can be trusted, someone who grew up in an abusive home, someone who, you know, doesn't know how to communicate effectively. If you have these red flags before you get married, they aren't going to go away just because you say I do. And not all the sex in the world can make communication problems or conflict resolution any easier. So it's so important that we try to, you know, find someone who makes the easiest transition into our life. There's a lot of people we can love. I've loved a lot of people, you know, and felt like, wow, that could be someone I'd spend my life with. But there's very few people that you can seamlessly merge your life with and really make it work long term. And so if you have the ability to have not made that commitment already, to take the time to really look at what you are merging. It's not just about falling in love and saying, hey, let's, you know, build a life together. It's about, hey, here's my experience and here's your experience and here's where we'd like to be in the future. And if those things merge well, it's going to make the journey of the marriage so much easier. Because marriage isn't easy in the best of times or the easiest of relationships because there's so much that goes into it. So Rhonda, you're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Well, I've been married for almost 13 years come December to
Congratulations.
Someone who is my best friend. I think that's key. Mm-hmm. You have to like the person that you're marrying. But one thing I've noticed with people in my age group, younger and a little older, is the influence that television has in marriage, reality television in particular. Mm-hmm. You know, the Kardashians of the world, where there's no sense of reality anymore about what marriage is really about. I'm not saying marriages need to be about the cleavers, mm-hmm. but it's definitely also not what reality television portrays it to be. And I think there are a lot of people in my age range that want that. They want what they see on television.
Right.
They don't want the realities. I've had a number of friends who have gotten married, women specifically. I have known a guy, though, that has done this as well, to have the day,
right.
to have the party,
right.
not to have the 15, 20, 30, 40 years of struggles financially, emotionally, socially. They are getting married for the wrong reasons.
Yes.
This is something that has struck me, and it bothers me greatly. Because too many people don't see it for what it really, really is. It's not your parents' marriage. It's not your grandparents' marriage. It's not your best friend's marriage. It's yours.
Yes.
And it's definitely not the marriage you see on television. Too many people, I think, want to live in a dream world.
Well, and I think that also is, you know, very true of how our culture is right now, right? It's a very adolescent culture. We're always about the shiny objects. Is someone getting something better? The iPhone 4, then I want the iPhone 5. You know, we're all about trading up and trading in and trading for better.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So our marriages are really struggling and suffering from the whole cultural mindset that we are in now, that there is no idea of commitment or loyalty or longevity. You know, for better or for worse, people don't start a job and stay there for 30, 40 years anymore. They change jobs 10, 15 times. You know, we don't
yes.
stay in one area. We don't stick with anything because we fear, right? FOMO, we fear on missing out that someone might be having more fun or better sex or a hotter partner. And then, like you said, we see the images on television that make it look like everyone's having a great time and a better time. That message, that continual message that you should have more, you deserve more, it's all about you, that adolescent mindset rules our culture and makes it really difficult. And as a therapist, what's difficult for me is that a lot of the research, you know, tells us that people are healthier in long-term marriages, that children do better in long-term marriages, you know, that people's mental health and physical health is better in long-term solid marriages. But we get pressured by this cultural idea that if you're not happy, you should move on, right?
Without actually trying first.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's automatically, you're sad, you're unhappy,
fix
move
it.
On.
Yes.
That's the advice you hear over and over
right.
and over again.
And that is why I'm the reluctant therapist, because I am disappointed that my profession in many ways has fallen prey to that mindset of, yes, it's all about you being happy. If it's not working, move on. Kids will be fine. They'll adjust. Well, you know, for every one kid that adjusts and does well, there are hundreds of children who never get over the loss of their family. So
right.
So
I think it's a very id mindset.
Yes.
It's very me. Everything revolves around me.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I appreciate you calling in with that, because I think we need to start looking bigger than our immediate, right, what's in front of us. Because one of the things that frustrates me is a lot of the current hot books about marriage or work or children are written by people who have kids that are young, and they feel like they have it all. One, the book I'm thinking of is Leaning In, that's big right now, or To Lean In. And the woman who wrote it is a successful CEO, but her children are young. You know, I want to read the book by the woman whose kids are 25, 30, 35, and are doing well.
They've been there. They've struggled.
Right. Those are the women that I'm looking for. Yeah. When your kids are 4 or 5, you don't know. You don't know how you're doing as a parent, and you don't know how important your marriage is, because it's all in hindsight, right? Tell me from the marital standpoint of the couples who've been together 35, 40, 50 years, and on their husband or wife's deathbed, the person never says, gosh, I wished I'd spent more time working. They always say, I wish I'd spent more time with you. I wished I had been more vested in this marriage, because that was the thing that mattered.
Right. My husband and I had a great example to look forward to growing old because of them. It was his grandparents. Mm-hmm. They were married for, I believe, almost 60 years, 60. Mm-hmm. And, of course, when one passed on, the other didn't live much longer after. But they exemplified to us what a marriage should be, and the struggles that they went through World War II, and so on. I mean, you know the story.
Yes.
And I think with too many divorces going on in society, and what happens on television, and what people are looking up to, we're not getting those examples anymore.
Well, we have them. We just don't see a TV show about them, right? That's the difference.
Right, exactly. They're not fun.
Yeah,
they're not exciting.
Right. So, they're not the shiny object.
I just hope if anyone's listening who's planning on getting married that they are doing it for the right reasons, and they're not doing it for the day, for the party.
I agree.
For the reception. So that's all I had to say. I wanted to throw that out there. Hopefully save someone some heartache in the future.
Thank you for your wisdom, Rhonda. Enjoy your day.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. Bye. You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And if you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 805-781-3875. We're talking about marriage, and we're fighting for our right to marry in this country on every level. We're fighting for marriages. We're fighting for the right to love who we want to love and spend our life with them. But we need to talk more about how we make those marriages last, how we make sure that if we're making a commitment to someone for life, that we understand what that commitment to life means. So one of the things that's interesting about marriage is, when couples come in, and the thing I least like to hear is, well, we just fell out of love. Because you don't just fall out of love. Something happens early on that you start slipping out of the habit of being in love with each other. You stop doing those things that you did when you were first married that helped maintain love. Because love is something we have to work at. It doesn't just exist there because we want it to. And quite often, because of the busyness of our lives, we put the act of loving our partner behind things like our work and our children and our friendships. And, we just assume that once we get the partnership, once we get the marriage out of the way, then we can concentrate on other things. But that love that we feel in our relationship is dynamic, and it needs to be fed, and it needs to be nurtured. It needs to be taken out on the town. It needs to be complimented. It needs to be touched. It needs to be, even when you wonder why you're there, you have to take the time to connect with your partner. But to say to yourself, or to say to your therapist, we just fell out of love, so we're moving on, is a disservice to yourself and to your relationship. Because, we don't just fall out of love. Divorce doesn't just come to us out in the ethers and then we catch it like a cold. Divorce is a symptom of some things that happened, or divorce is actually the end result of many, many symptoms that we ignored along the way until it kind of blew up in our face. And I think one of the things that we don't talk about is, you know, what is that thing that gets in the way and kind of eats away at marriages over and over again? We think it's infidelity. But really, even though infidelity happens in quite a few marriages, rarely is it the reason the couple ends up getting divorced. Many couples come through an incident of infidelity and actually are stronger. As I talked about earlier, that second marriage, they grow stronger roots and understanding for each other when there's been a crisis in the marriage. So it's not really the infidelity that's a problem. It's not really money that's the problem or falling out of love. The killer of marriage is boredom. That couples allow themselves to get bored in the relationship, and then that shiny object outside of the relationship starts to look really enticing, whether it's another person or whether it's working really hard or whether it's, you know, a new friend or a new hobby, something that ignites us, and we take our energy away from our marital relationship because it feels boring, it feels the same, it feels habitual. One person always feels like they're trying harder than the other person, and so they give up and back away. And it's all those little symptomatic things that happen that build boredom in the relationship that end up blowing up in our face. But we can change that pattern if we're focused from the start on that commitment, that long-term understanding that a marriage is a work in progress. What are your thoughts? This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. If you'd like to call in, the number is 781-3875. It's about 2:45, and we'll be back to speak with Patricia.
That number again is 781-3875, 805-781-3875. We have less than 15 minutes left, so we can take a few more calls. During this time tomorrow, it's the show On Being. On the next episode tomorrow from 2 to 3, Krista Tippett sits down with Congressman and civil rights legend John Lewis in Montgomery, Alabama. For him, the civil rights movement was a work of love. He reveals what he's learned about the art of discipline, of the art and discipline of nonviolence, both then and now. That's tomorrow at 2 o'clock on Being here on KCBX. The number again is 805-781-3875. We can take a few more calls during this hour.
One of the things that's really difficult for modern marriages, and Brian, I know that this is something that we've talked about, is that we expect more from our marriages today. You know, I think Rhonda talked about it. It's not my grandmother's marriage. It's not my parents' marriage, because marriage has shifted since the 70s. You know, prior to the 1970s, marriage was much more about a partnership, a companionate sort of thing, where, you know, each person had very defined roles. More than likely, the men went out and made the money, and the women were home, traditional homemakers. But that all blew up in the 70s, and we changed our cultural expectations for marriage, that it became much more about a peer relationship with two people who are working and bringing equal economic efforts into the family, and both were working to raise the children, much more peer oriented. And we call these new expectations on marriage soulmate marriages. And soulmate marriages are what we're looking for today in our younger couples that are getting married, probably in the mid 80s and beyond, especially now in the 2000s. Couples talk about this idea of wanting to find my soulmate. And that takes a lot of work to be in a soulmate relationship. It takes constant care and nurturing, a lot of communication, and a lot of effort and energy. But these change in expectations are what are changing the face of what marriage is for a lot of people in the generations to come. So we aren't living our grandparents' marriages anymore. We're redefining them, but we're having a higher success rate with marriages that started in the 80s than we have had in a long time. Patricia, you're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just wanted to take a step back for a moment. You had made a comment, and thank you for taking my call. You had made a comment about children growing up and maybe 1 out of 100 in a divorced family not carrying baggage forward in their lives, and it being more difficult for them to succeed or more difficult for them to move forward in a more rational, normal fashion. And I agree with that totally, but I wanted to comment because I got divorced when my son was 4, and I wanted to give you just one positive, that he is probably one of the nicest, kindest, most successful people I know. So there is that 1 in 100 that does make it through a divorce.
Absolutely.
And does well.
Well, and I'm glad that she said that because, and I can I ask you, did you get remarried?
I have not been married since he was 4 and he's 31.
So the interesting thing, Patricia, is if we look at the statistics about divorce and children and why they do well, that because you didn't get remarried and have children with someone else and to create another family, your focus was still on your son. And so he maintained that sense of stability with you that I think was a big key to his success. And you should be commended for having that level of commitment to him. Because that was huge. That was a huge reason why he is the young man he is today. It was because you maintained that focus and that care.
Well, thank you for that. It was important to me to make sure that he got the attention that he needed. But I just wanted to let you know that there is that 1 in 100. And, you know, there is occasionally a positive.
Well, and I hope you heard what I said. That it, I think it was some of your decisions on how you were going to be divorced and carry on that made a difference in his success, and I commend you.
Thank you so much, and thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hi, Donna. You're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind?
I have a question.
Sure.
Hi, reluctant therapist. Nice to meet you. My question really is doesn't this come down to something as simple as whether a person really wants God to be the one who makes their rules in their lives? Because I've seen so many people get divorced because why would they want to nurture their relationship once they're done with it? You know, especially when you're talking about, let's say, a childless couple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the argument is to keep the family together for the child, well, what if there is no child? So I think that when you've got two people who are going through a really, really rough patch, if, you know, both of them are people who, you know, are staying together because they feel that God's rules are probably for their best interest and aren't going to benefit them the most and hurt the fewest people, then they'll probably have a greater obligation to God, thus one another as well. I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, and it's interesting because when you look at, and I just was looking at my 12 characteristics of happily married couples done by a group called Amato. Amato was the researcher. And they always note that spirituality is an important piece in families and marital stability. You know, not necessarily one type of religion or religious affiliation, but the sense of spirituality. And I think that talks about, you know, that level of commitment or having that sense of building your life with someone and witnessing them and sharing that deeper connection of spiritual bond, whatever that looks like.
And one of the things I've noticed is, I mean, so much of today's philosophy is, it's like you were saying earlier, if you're not happy, then change it, regardless of what the cost is to those around you or the ripple effect that you don't even know about.
Right.
And I've seen the ripple effect in my own family, and it's huge, and I just feel like, you know, if there's someone greater than all of us who's got our best interests and the best advice that they can give, and we have respect for that advice, and we both say, okay, you know what, I'm going to surrender to that and also think of others that I might make the best choice not hurting if I, you know, if I really just remain loyal to the promise I made, you know, and continue to recognize that this person that I'm married to, unless there's like infidelity or something, but that this person that I'm married to is a person, just a person like myself. And if we can sit down and say, okay, this is not working, we're really unhappy with each other right now, but let's keep it going and start working some things out because there's someone more important than us.
I agree. I appreciate your thoughts on that, too, because I think we do in our marriages need to have this idea as a couple of where we're going. You know, what is that foundation? What is that thing that holds us as a couple? And to revisit that often. You know, my husband and I, every year on our anniversary, we talk about the state of our union. You know, where are we at? Where would we like to be next year or in 5 years? How are we both feeling about our relationship? And we really kind of do a state of the union, an assessment, and talk about what keeps us together and how do we improve it? It's that, you know, constant care and tending is so important. Another thing that's really helpful and it's something to understand is that in stable marriages, there's a few things you can do besides, you know, spending time together and not just hanging out, staring time, but fun time, romantic time. Choose 10 different exciting date nights and live them out. Make a commitment to those. But also it's important to remember that in positive, healthy marriages, there are 5 positive experiences to every 1 negative experience. So when we talk about positive, that's sharing laughter or touching each other or smiling or sharing a compliment. So 5 of those positive experiences to every 1 negative, like eye rolling or sneering or criticizing someone or criticizing your partner or being angry with them or withdrawing, you know, for every one of those negative things, you need 5 of the positive to balance that out. And just saying I'm sorry doesn't really help negate a negative experience. It takes 5 more positives. So that's something to remember, that if we build up those negatives, it becomes very difficult to get the spiral of positivity going in our marriage again. So we really need to try to get back to that place of positive communication, of remembering why we got married. So here's my biggest tip for happy marriages, and that is telling the story about how you fell in love. Tell the story of your courtship to each other, to other people, because when you tell that story, that reminds you of that time when you were most romantically charged, when you were feeling hot for each other, when you were just getting to know each other. And in retelling that story, it cues our brain to release those same hormones that we felt at the time about being excited, about being turned on, about being in love. And we can change our biology just in the telling the story of how we fell in love and why we fell in love with this person. And when we say that story out loud over and over to our partner, to our friends, we build those hormones and positive feelings with our partner that is so healthy and important. So that's the main takeaway from today's story about marriage, is to try to really focus in on what you can tell about your marriage that will reignite those hormones and good feelings so that you can feel positive and connected to your spouse. So one quick call with Carolyn. You're on the air. You got 30 seconds. What's on your mind?
I don't know if I have enough time. So, but I do want to tell you, it did make me smile. My husband and I have been together since we were 16.
Oh, congratulations.
We're 60, but my son is going through the opposite. So I wanted to talk to you about it, but obviously I don't have time.
Can you call me next week? Call me next week.
I surely will.
I'll take you first. Call right at the beginning of the hour because, you know, your story is a story that a lot of people are struggling with. And if you're willing to share it, I want to share it with you.
Okay, great.
Call
thank
me next
you so
week.
Much.
Thanks, Carolyn. And thank you for everyone who called in today to talk about marriage. I think we had a great 50-minute hour. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. If you'd like to continue the conversation, please come to my Facebook page. Check out The Reluctant Therapist on Facebook or Elizabeth at thereluctanttherapist.com if you'd like to drop me an email. I do appreciate your phone calls. So next week, if you didn't get in today, please call back next week. And remember to listen fully. Connect with each other, tell your stories, and remember that you always have the answers inside you if you just find a way to hear them. Thank you for listening and supporting Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is The Reluctant Therapist.